So this is June 10th, and this is a NeoWit event for on resume writing. We have four panelists: Laura McCreary from PNC Bank, Morgan Phillips from Joann Fabrics, Megan Cuthbert from MRI Software, and Taylor Deisman from Tech Systems. And they are our panelists talking about resume writing. So let's go on to a question that I have here. So this is something that I mentioned earlier, and it's always something that I have done this in the past, but I didn't know if it was kind of like overkill. And that is, do I need to have a different version of my resume for each job that I apply to? So if I'm applying to two or three different jobs, kind of have two or three different resumes. And that I've done that because I think somebody at a recruiting position at one point had told me that's one way to go. But what would you all advise?
So
I think
for that, I don't think it's necessarily necessary to have a different resume for every single position you're applying for, but I do feel like within IT, there's so many different technologies and different tools and ways that you can go. So I definitely think it would be important to tweak your resume or tailor it towards specific technologies or that specific position that you're applying for. So I do think making little edits here and there are increasing your chances. Now, do I think you need to rewrite a whole resume for every position? Absolutely not, but just little things here and there I think will help with that.
I agree. Dependent on your search and what you're looking for, I think you could have a couple of general versions, but I don't think it has to be for each one. Like when people write in their objective, for X position at MRI Software, that's not something that I think is a huge bonus, that I know that you made it specifically for this position. But I do think that sometimes it could be helpful to highlight certain skills if you're trying to go for a certain area. So if you were in a smaller company where you wore a ton of hats and now you're really looking to hone your skills, let's say into, QA, like you might want to then have a resume that's more specific to your QA experience, even though you also did coding and you also did, product owner work and anything else. You might just want to have one that highlights those specific skills. If there's like a whole bunch that you're applying to in a certain field, I could see that being beneficial. If you have, again, a lot of information that you want to try to highlight or consolidate down, you might have a few versions that way.
Okay, great. So it wasn't a total mistake. That's good to know. What are some of the most common mistakes you see people making with their resumes?
So I say a lot of things that I see, people will put, either in their objective or in a bullet point or something that they have attention to detail. And then probably at least half the time, then they'll misspell something in their resume. And it's just something I always tell my candidates is prove something. Like, it's nice to say you have attention to detail, but, prove it and say, you were the head of, project XYZ and oversaw this part of it. Prove that you have attention to detail, because when you say something like that and then I see a misspelling, and nowadays you have a little red squiggly, like, there's really no excuse for having, for having that mistake, quite frankly. And like I said, I have a lot of like business analyst type jobs, project manager, where their life is documentation. And I've had hiring managers just say, no, I don't want to meet with them because they're not willing to just take 5 minutes and read over and make sure this looks good. Even for help desk roles, my one hiring manager won't speak with them because they have to document. They open up a ticket and they say, here's what happened, and they want it to be accurate. So I would say that's probably the biggest mistake I see. And not to get ahead of the questions, but it's also my biggest pet peeve.
Sure. What are the kinds of things happen? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then another thing specific to IT is if you're applying to a role that you need a technical background, I want to know what technologies you know. I have seen a lot of director level candidates or manager level candidates that don't list the technologies that they need or that they know. And for us at JoAnn, in order to be a successful leader within our IT space, you have to come from a technical background. I've screened out a lot of candidates. I'm looking for a director of application development right now, and I've screened out a lot of candidates because they don't list what their background is in. It's just like leadership, really leadership focused. And although that's important for us, it's so important that you have the technical background. So we look for SAP. They could have SAP experience, but I don't know that based on their resume. So I screen them out. So I think that's really important for a technical role, even if it is a leadership role, to list the skills that you have and what technologies.
Right. Anything else?
I would say, too, to add to all of that, especially for IT-related positions, a lot of people in their resume will put all their skill sets and everything they've done on the top, but then they don't incorporate them into the body of their resume. So for me, I understand that you use, I don't know, whether you work with a C# or .NET environment or whether you've used SQL or whatever the case may be, I want to see where you use that, like what companies you use that, what you've done with it. So I feel like a lot of people just list everything in the top and then don't explain more, and that's really important, and it really catches the attention more when I can see what exactly you've done and where you've used it.
Yeah, I use Control F in resumes all the time. Like I Control F SAP, and I just like read every bullet point that has SAP in it. And the more that they say SAP, the more interested I am in them, because it's like, oh, you've done this at a couple companies. Like, okay, you have some background in it. So I totally agree. If it's not in the body of it, I don't think it's as meaningful.
You guys were saying something about listing the skills or the tools that you have some expertise in, right? Particularly for a technical role. So I know this isn't necessarily sort of the order that I have some of the questions in, but I mean, what's the typical length? Like if I break that out and put it somewhere else, maybe it makes my resume too long. I mean, is a 2-page resume too much? Is that acceptable?
I don't think a 2-page resume is too much. I think it's when it starts getting longer than that you really need to assess, is all the information that's on this resume important and things that I want to highlight. You really have to think of your resume as, this is highlighting my skills. And we as recruiters totally understand that this is not comprehensive of your experience, but you do have to list like all the things that you want us to know without knowing you. And that's what gets you through the door. And so, you know, I know that that could be a fine line, but really anything over 2 pages comes off a little excessive to me personally. I don't ever see value on that 3rd or 4th page that couldn't be condensed. And so a lot of times for me, it's the what you've done during your job. And if you've been at a company for a really long time, it's super hard to condense it. I respect that it's a challenge to do that, but I think you have to look at like, you know, big projects or big wins or when you did work with new technologies, anything. Again, if you try to just go back to that question of what do I want them to know before I can, you know, elaborate further on it.
And I think that's where you can also think about editing your resume for the position. So if there is a position and you have a resume of 6 pages, the recruiter most likely is not going through all 6 pages. So think about what's relevant for that position and pare it down to that. All the resume needs to do is get you a phone call. Once you get a phone call, you can talk about those things. You can highlight things that aren't on your resume and have the conversation. All you need that resume to do is get you a phone call with a recruiter, and then you're good because you can talk about the experience that you don't have on there.
That's a good point, right? So we talked about mistakes. things that are sort of irritating to see on a resume, or how long it is, if it's too long. What kinds of things really stand out to you? You know, in addition to, we talked about skills. So of course, if somebody has a matching set of skills, that's going to help their case. But what other kinds of things will make you take a second look at a resume?
This is more kind of speaking from like a format standpoint, but and I think Morgan kind of touched on this earlier, but I like whenever they kind of rate their proficiency in a certain like technology or skill set, you know, like if they say, you know, 10 out of 10 proficiency in SQL or something like that. And then like Morgan kind of said, then you're going through and seeing, okay, speak to that more down throughout. But I kind of like that when they, you know, because with our positions, you know, 3+ years of XYZ experience, and then you go and you see that on the resume that they rate themselves as such. I think I find that helpful. I find that useful for sure.
Anybody else?
I also really like to see when somebody has promotions within the same company. So not just listing the last role that you had, and you don't have to do a whole lot of detail, but I like to see progression because that shows that your company was investing in you, that you were proven at whatever you did to get that next promotion. So I really like to see in job enlargement, even if it's from going from like an application engineer to a senior, that to me shows like you did something great and you deserved a promotion. So I like to see that as much as possible.
In particular, if there's some kind of leadership progression. Right. Anybody else? What other kinds of things really? How about like, you know, sort of, I know we were talking about format in a little bit, but something that is really eye-catching, does that help your case or not? Is that just kind of eye candy?
I think if it just looks professional and that you put the time into it, that it's not a, I mean, gosh, I've gotten like weird, like almost like they wrote it on the notepad in the iPhone and like submitted it. So not that, like, but other than, I don't know, I'm not choosing a resume because it looks prettier over another resume with the better substance. So it's more about that, but you do want to put a little effort into it. This is what is representing you at this point. So you know, I mean, it should look professional. There's so many templates out there, you know, in Word or just online, that if you just put a little bit of effort into it, it goes a really long way. And so when people don't put anything, again, if it just kind of looks like a Word document with, you know, no proper formatting, you know, it feels like there was no effort put into it. So I could see that in terms of aesthetics being something that I would think about, but it doesn't have to be super cool. I mean, unless you're going into graphic design, then that's, you know, a little different story. But if you are, you know, applying to a regular job or, you know, a job outside of that, that doesn't need to show that creative or artistic side of it. It doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I agree.
Echo, you want it to look professional, but it is about the substance. So if you have something that's too elaborate and intricate, it kind of takes away what you're trying to say. Mm-hmm. I saw a resume the other day and the whole thing was blue, like a blue background. I don't even know how you do that, but you know, it's, I'm not impressed by your blue resume. I'm impressed by what's on it and what you have to say. So echoing off of that, you want it to be professional and you want it to look good, but it doesn't have to stand out in a pile because it's the prettiest one.
I almost think sometimes it takes away from the point that you're trying to present. Like I did, I don't have a problem with headshots. I'm seeing that more and more. Oh, and really? I know that globally, like people do use them. So I'm never going to, you know, say don't. You definitely don't have to. But I have seen, you know, just ones that are crazy. Like I did, I saw a whole background of somebody's picture, like of themselves, like kind of transparent. And that's all we could talk about, like within my group. Like I couldn't even really get to. Of course, I assess them correctly, but it can. It can be distracting. Right. So, professionals.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's kind of funny you said that.
What not to do?
Yeah, I had one once. Yeah, and it almost looked like he was making a joke of it, like kind of the way he was posed. And I think he was like holding like a cat or something. And like, I mean, yeah, it was very distracting, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So some of these we kind of talked about. So what would you say is the most important part of a resume? Do people always have, there's all different kinds of format, right? Historical or grouping sort of experience and doing it that way. What's the most common? What do you prefer? What's the most helpful to read, the easiest to read and evaluate?
I think the most common is putting, I guess I don't know if it's the most common, but obviously a section for education, a section for experience, and then a section a lot of times for technologies, if we're talking in the technology space. I like to see all of those to a couple people's points, especially in the technology world. It makes sense to highlight those. So I think that those are important to have. I tend to read things because most of them are your most recent experience at the top and then going down. That's kind of what I expect always. So I'm a little confused, but I don't know. I wouldn't rule somebody out because of the order that they decide to put it in. But I would say that you want to think about the recruiter and thinking that, yes, they're going to read your entire resume, but the first thing that they're seeing is that top part. So that's why people have said to have objectives, or if technology is what you want to highlight, maybe you put that on top. Or if you're a recent graduate, a lot of times up top is where you're going to put your education. And if you think about that, it's a lot of times because that's what you're seeing when you read a book or a page. You're looking up top first. So anything that's most relevant, and a lot of times that's your most recent experience, is why I think that you should put your most recent experience and then go chronologically from there.
I agree with that. I feel like I'm talking a lot about director level candidates, but that's what I'm recruiting for right now. That's primarily what I focus on. But when I see like an application engineer, like that's their last job, that to me does not say that they're ready for a director. So I'll look a few down, but typically I don't go super far. So if your resume is flipped and you have your most recent last, I'm probably not going to get all the way down there before I make the decision to pass on you, because we get tons of applications, so I can't take the time to read every single word. If it doesn't catch my eye, then I'm probably not going to look all the way through it. So definitely encourage reverse chronological order, so your most recent experience, and that's like probably the thing that you can talk about the most. We're going to have the most questions on. That's what I typically look at.
Okay. Let's see. So
I'll also add, this is kind of random and I don't know that it really goes with this question, but something that I have really irritates me is if somebody has a LinkedIn and they don't link it on their resume. Like, I look at LinkedIn constantly, and I know that's not like everyone. But I find it very strange when somebody in technology does not have a LinkedIn. So if you don't have a LinkedIn, I would encourage you to make one, and you can put all the information you want out there. That can be a longer resume, that can have all of your experience, where the recruiter can then go look. So it doesn't necessarily have to be linked on your resume, but if I'm looking for your LinkedIn, can't find it, I feel like there's something weird happening.
So that brings up a good point. I mean, what about other social media? Is that sort of part of the research that you all do when you are, this is off the topic of resumes, but when as you're evaluating candidates, do you go to social media and do a little bit of research that way, or just do a Google search on someone?
I was just telling someone the other day that I do not have the time to be doing that. And it was something that I feel like we were almost like, you know, they tried to instill fear in you. Like when I was graduating college, it was like, make everything private. Don't have a solo cup in any picture that you have. Take down any pictures in bathing suits. And it was like all this stuff. And I was just telling my cousin, I'm like, no, I would never, unless there's a reason, like a weird reason. But I'm looking at LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn did, you know, spike over the past few years, and maybe that's why. So that was kind of the trade. Maybe when nobody had LinkedIn, it was a way to try to, you know, get just that little bit more information with searching other social media sites. But I'm not doing it unless something really odd comes up. And then in that case, you know, it's probably something that already is predetermined. It's I'm not making or breaking a decision based off of your social media.
Okay. I agree. All right. What are your thoughts on someone, now this is sort of, you know, imagine a post-COVID world, right? What do you think about someone coming to your office and dropping off a resume? Maybe they ask for you personally. So this would be somebody outside the company that you work for, not an, you know, I'm thinking of Laura here because we work at the same place. What is your sort of thought process on that?
So this actually happened to me. The person didn't drop it off personally, but they mailed it to me. And it actually wasn't even a candidate in one of my recs. It was just a job seeker in general. And quite frankly, it didn't really do anything for me. We're in such a digital age, you know what I mean? Yeah. Where, you know, we can connect in 2 seconds on LinkedIn or, you know, send me an email, apply to my position that... It just doesn't seem very savvy right now. You know what I mean? I appreciate personal touch, but I think I kind of mentioned this earlier. You know, I want to see that touch when I reach out to you. You know, I want to see how you interact on the phone. I want to hear how you know, your phone skills and everything like that. But personally for me, it was just a paper to manage and say, okay, well, let me.
Right, exactly.
You know, let me put this up here on my bulletin board so I remember to get back to this person, you know, whereas in just my email inbox, I just know I have to respond to this person and connect with them and everything. So not that I don't appreciate the effort, because like I said, I love pleasantries, but I kind of felt that was unnecessary.
It's almost an inconvenience, I would think, to you guys, right? Because then you've got to, like you said, keep track of this one piece of paper, because this is the only person who applied like this. And then, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and if you've seen my desk, then you'd be like, wow, okay.
I would advise that you spend more time focusing on, you know, making your resume something that stands out, your LinkedIn profile, something that stands out. You know, I get LinkedIn messages all the time. I don't always respond, but I think that that's a valid way to try to kind of put an extra push for yourself, an extra advocation. Other than that, anything outside of that, it's not... I don't know. It's just not something that we do have the luxury really to appreciate at this point, because, you know, to Laura's point, we are in such a digitalized world that to me, it starts to think, you know, why didn't they just apply to the job? You know, why didn't they reach out to me on LinkedIn? I know it's a little bit of like an old fashioned thought of, you know, hey, go hand it in person. It's just, I think, a little bit of a different world now.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, my reaction to it is like, why didn't you follow my process of applying to a job? Which is, I know that's like very like close-minded, but for me, it's like all of our jobs are posted. So take the time to submit your application there, especially for somebody who just sends their resume in and doesn't apply to a specific position. It's like, I'm not going to take the time to find the role that's right for you. If you apply to a position and maybe you're not qualified for that position, but for another position, yeah, I will make that connection. But somebody who just sends their resume in blindly, to me, feels like they didn't do their due diligence and they're not actually interested. They're just seeking a job. So I typically don't reach out to candidates who either mail or drop their resumes off. I may look them up, and if they're in one of my recs, then maybe, but it doesn't make or break a decision for me.
Have you had candidates follow up with phone calls? There's been no initial contact on your part. They've sent in their resume, or they have applied online, and they want to find out what the status is of their application, right? That's something that, you know, recruiters in the past say, oh, you know, be really aggressive about finding out, you know, who's looking at your resume or whatever. What are your thoughts on that? Does it happen?
I don't love it. I'm doing a lot, and I think, you know, we all are, and I schedule appointments. So when somebody calls me, there's a chance they catch me, but there's also a chance that they don't. And I still, you know, again, to Morgan's point, I want to follow my process and do it. And that's going to give me a much better just mindset of how we're going into our initial conversation versus me, you know, running into another meeting, taking this call and going, we need to schedule a time and I haven't even looked at your resume yet. I think that recruiters, we do try to be, you know, very cautious about the timeline and understanding of things. I know that we try to have at MRI like a touch point of, you know, in like within 5 days that, you know, we're kind of doing something with it. It doesn't always happen. We don't live in a perfect world, but it's something that, you know, we also want you to get through the process. We also want to fill the role. And I tell this to people all the time is that I want this to work out for you. I want to fill the role. That's my goal too. So I'm doing things that I can at the time that I can to get that accomplished.
Yeah, so for me, really, for an external candidate, they really don't know who's kind of behind the scenes until I make that initial reach out. And then, you know, once I email them, they have email, my name, you know, sometimes they'll connect with me on LinkedIn, phone number, that sort of thing. But I mean, it's one of those things where once I have that initial conversation, I set up the meeting. You know, if the hiring manager, sometimes I'll send the resume to the hiring manager beforehand and I know they want to meet with them and I'll just set an interview up on the spot. Not always, sometimes. It just kind of depends on the calibration I've set with my hiring manager. You know, for internals, as you know, Deb, you can see who the recruiter is and sometimes they'll kind of reach out and everything. And I mean, Megan had kind of summed up, you know, kind of what I was thinking. You know, we have a process we want to follow and everything. I'm certainly happy to have that conversation. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, sometimes, you know, if I have a rec right now that has 200 candidates in it and we're picking one person. Yeah. and in a perfect world, I would have enough time to reach out to every person and say, here's why we're not moving forward with you. You know, here's what's to work on or here's what we're looking for next time. But it's just not possible. So, I just think it's important. Megan had said about, you know, the timeline, you know, acting quickly on it one way or another, because you're either going to hear from me or you're going to hear from the system. You know what I mean? So you'll know one way or the other. So I think that's important just to, you know, kind of keep track of my own stuff and everything like that. But yeah, it's not often that I get, every once in a while, somebody will say, hey, my friend applied to your position. They haven't heard anything. Reach out. And if somebody reaches out to me specifically, I will do that as a courtesy, you know, regardless. But in a perfect world, I could reach out to everybody, but you just can't.
Right.
Yeah. And I think for clarification too, like I think that's exactly what Laura's saying is like, I don't mind follow up. Like follow up is totally fine. Sometimes, right. Yeah, I'm not as quick to get to something, even if I do have that response right in front of me. So I am fine with follow up. It's kind of what at that initial touch point, it's like, yes, you are going to get contacted. I think that most all places do that now at this point where, again, to Laura's point, either the system or myself are going going to, you know, have a contact with you on an application that was submitted. So, you know, and that's where we get, like, we have a recruiting line, and sometimes we'll get those calls like, I just submitted my application. And that's when I'm like, all right, just hold on, be a little bit patient. But yeah. And, you know, if it is something out of the ordinary, these are more generalizations. I think there's an exception to every rule. If you submit something and it's still posted and you haven't heard anything in a couple of weeks, like, sure, reach out. Like, I think that that's fine. That's appropriate. I don't think anyone would be mad about that. But, you know, kind of just assess the situation. And I would say, you know, on a general rule of thumb, like, be patient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think this is kind of like for folks who are re-entering the workforce, maybe after a long period of time of taking off, maybe raising a family or an illness or something. But how many years should be listed on a resume, and should I include or not include positions before the year 2000, right? Which is 20 years ago. That's a long time. And we don't want 6 pages, right?
Right. And I mean, that's tough because sometimes it's relevant, but, you know, we've done a lot in the last 20 years in terms of technologies and updates and everything like that. And quite frankly, I think that from before 2000, any system, not, you know, this isn't a hard and fast rule, but a lot of it would just be antiquated to the point where it wouldn't be relevant anymore. You know what I mean? So I would say generally probably not, but, you know, like we said, there's kind of exceptions to everything. If it, you know, if it happens to be something that they're looking for, you know, I do have some hiring managers that they use really kind of outdated systems and they're looking for that. But I would say generally probably not. But something else I would kind of say to that, I do like when I see, you know, from, you know, 2000 to 2010 or whatever, you know, homemaker or whatever, I like when they explain like what that gap is, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. that's something a lot of hiring managers ask, or if they've seen, Morgan had mentioned this earlier about kind of listing out promotions and everything like that in the same company. Like, that's nice to see. But yeah, like if somebody lists, you know, 8-9 different companies over the last 2-3 years, you know, and it's not consulting or contracting, that kind of makes you wonder. So I like when they explain that gap. So that's one question answered anyway.
Yeah, so
a red flag.
I do think it's, you know, it is tough and it's a situational thing, but I've also seen people that, you know, worked like in the maybe PTA or something, or like worked as a treasury or did something, even if it was for like a family business. And, you know, anything that is utilizing skills that you think are going to be valuable to a potential position or, you know, to add to what you're doing. I think that it's helpful to help bridge that gap a little bit. Or, you know, I always say, you know, maybe start with temporary work. I know that a lot of times, you know, they're more open to someone's background to get a little bit of experience now under your belt in this, you know, potentially, you know, new era, to get a little bit of that experience. Sometimes it is hard for a company to full-time commit to somebody that, you know, has been out of the workforce, but that's not to disvalue somebody. We know that there are a lot of great people that do have to re-enter at some point and weren't doing it for, you know, a point or another, but there are some ways to try to be creative to plump up your resume a little bit and your experience to get you to that final destination of where you want to be.
Are you guys seeing a lot more resumes? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I also wonder too, like when somebody has a break in their experience, totally fine. But I typically ask, how did you stay connected to technology during that time, especially for IT positions? Because it's like, how do I know you've kept up to date with things and you're not just going to come back and think that everything is the same as when you left 10 years ago? Because we've evolved so much. So, you know, even if they're just like, I read LinkedIn articles and I've done some LinkedIn training or like simple stuff like that, super fine, but you've been thinking about it, you care about it, and it's something that you've cared and taken your own personal time to do. So I love to hear things like that.
Morgan, that's exactly what I was going to say too. Like, if you, any kind of courses you've taken or articles you've read, anything that you've done to try to keep up with anything. I think it's so important to add to show that while you had that gap and you weren't working for whatever the case may be, that you were still keeping up to things. So I definitely think it's important to add that stuff if you have a gap.
Kind of like off of that question, that was actually one that I wrote down that I wanted to make sure was answered. But for job gaps, so would you prefer that someone put the reason why the gap is there on their resume? Like, and on top of that, do you guys ever rule someone out when you see a job gap, or do you investigate a little bit further before you make that decision?
I investigate, Sarah, if it's not explained, I'll say, hey, I noticed, or if I see kind of a lot of like jumping around, you know, different companies, I'll say, talk me through that. You know, it's something that makes me kind of scratch my head a little bit. Like, I want to, like you said, investigate that, because a lot of times the hiring manager will also ask me that, you know, hey, what's going on with this? Just to have that answer ready for them. But it's not a deal breaker, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
When I see a large gap in years, I typically think you probably stayed at home with kids. So I usually ask about it. That doesn't make a decision for me. If I see a lot of jumping around though, from like, unless it's temp positions or contract positions, then I will roll them out if I have other qualified candidates. Cause that to me says they might not be able to hold down a job, or they can't stay comfortable somewhere, or, whatever the reason might be. That is a red flag for me. If I don't have other qualified candidates and it's a tough to fill position, then I will still talk to them. But if I have a rec full of candidates, that will make me decline them. But usually like a large gap in years does not, because it typically is something they can easily explain.
Yeah.
I was going to say that too, that if it's a position that is heavily saturated with applicants, that sometimes it can be a deal breaker for me if there's not a little explanation. So
okay.
I like it, but I'm fine with that being in the cover letter too. Like that would be a reason that I would try to look at someone's cover letter, would be like, mm-hmm. you know, there's this huge gap. Like, do they have an explanation for it if it's not on there? So a couple of options to, you know, help try to overcome that if it is a position that, you know, again, you're like talking like support teams, you know, sales, maybe just even like entry-level coding, like ones that are usually pretty popular positions if you want to stay competitive.
Go ahead, a sort of side question to that.
A lot of times when you see, you know, the postings for tech jobs, there's a long list of, there's like maybe a main skill, but a number of side skills that you're looking for, and seldom you're an exact match. For some of those side skills, what's the best way to demonstrate the ability to learn that side skill? And I'm going to use like a report writing tools and as example as a side skill in a space. So you've got a new snazzy report writer tool that I haven't learned yet, but the fact that I've learned 5 different report writing tools over the last however many years can help demonstrate that I picked them up quickly. Is there a place on the resume for that, or is that something you slide more into where you would go to the cover letter?
That's a great question. I would say that it could be even both. I wouldn't mind seeing that in a bullet point ever, whether it was just kind of a highlights of some of your technology skills, saying, you know, worked with all these different reporting tools, learned each, you know, brand new at each company I joined, or, you know, during your overviews of your time at the job, saying that, you know, I picked up this new reporting writing tool, hadn't used before. Obviously maybe a bit more polished than that, but I could definitely, you know, pick that out, and that to me would say, oh, she has the ability to pick up new technologies, so that if it was a side, not a mandatory requirement, then that could definitely you know, be something that I would want to talk further about.
For sure. Yeah, Joanne is guilty of having a very long we need this list. And what I typically do is I pick a couple of those skills, even if it's still in the application or the job posting. I will pick a couple of those skills that I know or need to have. And if they're not on the resume, they're going to get declined. But if it's something like a report writing tool or whatever it might be, if I've seen, this is where I think bullet points come into play and having your technical skills throughout your bullet points. Because if I see like at this company, you use this thing, and then at this other company, you use this other thing, and then this other company, you use this other thing, you have the technical aptitude to learn something new. And there is something that is similar about each one of those. And if we use something different, you've learned three others, you can learn this one too. So I would say like, that's where you can work it into your bullet points and show like you have had these different experiences. If it's something that is required, so going back to my same example, SAP is required for one of our positions. It is a not negotiable. Even if you have a list of all of these other things that you've used, if you have not used SAP, you are declined from that position, because it is like, but clearly written in the job description that we need that experience. So that's the time where I wouldn't necessarily use technical aptitude to make a decision on if you could move into the role. But if it's one of those like preferred skills or, you know, exposure to whatever, I think that's where you can see and make a decision based on aptitude.
Yeah, I think Morgan brings up a great point, because, you know, kind of from that intake session on, like as recruiters, that's kind of our responsibility to say, okay, you want them to have some sort of ticketing experience. It can be Salesforce, ServiceNow, whatever, or no, it's a must have. Like I need PeopleSoft financials. You know what I mean? So I think that's a great point. So I think if, you know, because a lot of times we'll say, yeah, okay, you know, this person doesn't have whatever, you know, are you comfortable with this? So I think putting that, and then just, yeah, looking at the job description, say, okay, this is a must have, you know, it's something that, and sometimes, you know, I'll go back to the hiring manager and say, we're not getting any resumes. Can we kind of scale back a little bit, kind of, you know, be a little bit more lenient, and then we'll look with certain technologies and everything. So I think it's important. And I think maybe even Megan called that out to kind of bullet that out and everything for some technology.
Along that same vein, but like slightly different, if you are looking at a job, at least for my experience, and you check most of the boxes, I would encourage you to apply, even if it's like, this is required and you can check like 5 out of the 7. I would encourage you to apply, because something on there is probably negotiable. And if it's not, okay, fine, but you at least got your resume in there, and there could be another position that you're qualified for. If you check like 2 out of 7, then you're probably not qualified for the role. But that's typically how I gauge it. Like if you have most of the things, it's worth at least submitting your resume.
I've heard that they use software to initially screen the candidate. So how important are the keywords? So do we have to keep changing the keywords every time we apply for a position, or how is it going to be?
So we don't use software. I think maybe some very large companies, I don't know. I don't have any experience with that. But like Morgan stated earlier, that sometimes she does some keyword searches for some key pieces of a position. And I would echo that if you are, you know, applying for a job that's very specific in a certain technology, then that would be the only time that I would maybe encourage you to write as much information that you've used the technology with, and that would then enhance the keyword, which would then, you know, show us that, oh, she worked with it in so many different capacities.
I think that also kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier as to having maybe more than one version of your resume. I know not many companies necessarily use like a keyword scanner, but I think that would be more so with the position that you're applying for, you want to tailor your resume to that. So I think that would be kind of where having more than one version of your resume or tweaking it to a specific role would come in play there. Maybe not necessarily specifically for a keyword search.
Thank you.
Yeah, we don't use a keyword search, but I I do use my own. But I did work for a company that did, and I actually reviewed all of the candidates that were filtered out to make sure that it was working. So there is like some, there are, I think there are like a lot larger companies or companies with smaller departments that can't go through everything. But we did like an audit where we made sure that everything was working and that it was filtering out the right kinds of people. But I do think those key words are important, whether they're using a system or not. If there are required technologies and that's not listed in your resume, that to me is, you're filtered out anyways. So I think they're important. And like Taylor said, it has to do with like those different versions of your resume, depending on the position.
Good question, Deepa.
Thank you.
So I've had like younger new grads come and ask about, you know, internships at PNC or just a job. We have a development program there. How do I get into that? Because I think we get a lot of applicants. I don't know that we take everybody. But one of the things that I know when I was at MRI that I would talk to folks about is, you know, show that you have this real passion and interest in, and it was always technology folks, right? It was always developers. Show that you have this interest by maybe putting together a portfolio. And when somebody asks, you know, do you have a repo or something of your work, you know, and this could actually apply to the folks who are designers as well, right? Like UI UX designers, and just have a portfolio of work so that if you are interviewed, you can sort of point to this and say, hey, look, I've got all this cool stuff. You know, I really am a developer or something. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I kind of never talked to a recruiter about giving people that advice, you know, just something that I thought to tell them. What do you guys think of, you know, candidates who come up with that stuff?
So a lot of times that's like required for design positions for us is to show a portfolio. So I think that that's definitely a great way to start building a portfolio is just, yeah, anything that you're excited about or happy with to start, you know, storing in a certain area that then if you are asked for that, it would be easily attainable and you can always go in and continue to update that. And then really like, I also have seen like people list on resumes their GitHub page or, you know, some sort of projects that they've done. Okay. And if you're lacking in professional experience because it is an internship that you're seeking or, you know, you are making a career change or whatever, anything like that is helpful. I would say that that's definitely something that I've passed along to managers and they've said, you know, oh yeah, I looked at their page. So if it's not me who doesn't quite understand like the intricacies of the technology, or if it is, you know, someone that does, like any of that is helpful.
That's good to know. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, when we go to, you know, like coding boot camps and we do, you know, like matchmaking events or something like that, to Megan's point, you know, if their experience is a little more junior and they don't really have a lot of, you know, tangible work experience to reference, they can talk about those projects at length and, you know, give a nice robust interview and talk about that. And, you know, they can visit their page and everything like that with the GitHub and everything. And it's good. It's enough to kind of, like I said before, prove that you've done this, that, and the other, and they can speak to it for sure.
Yeah, we, there's kind of only really two instances where we've asked to see somebody's work. And the first one was an associate level position. He didn't have any experience, but he talked about a project. So he showed us the project and that like blew the whole team away and was like, we have to hire this guy because we're going to really lose out if we don't. So that was like a huge win for him. We weren't even looking for an entry level position. We were actually looking for mid level and decided on him because his project was so great. And then the other time that we've asked was a mobile developer because we wanted to see what work they had done in the mobile space. And so he shared like the app that he had worked on and talked us through like what he had done. So those are really the only instances where we ask somebody to look at something. We have had some mobile developers not be able to share anything, and that was kind of like, we're not sure we want to make this jump. But more of the back end, like anyone who's in like our back end or back office stuff, we've never really asked to see any of their work. But more of that like customer facing stuff we would.
Is it something that should, like a link to a portfolio or a repo, is that something that should go on a resume, or is that like a second conversation?
I think it depends. If that's what you want to highlight as your experience, then I think it should be on the resume, because again, that's all that I know. If you have nothing else, and then like there's a lot of times that I would say, oh, they're not qualified, whereas, you know, some sort of project or something could help say, okay, let's talk further about it. But if you're someone that does have experience and these are things that you just, you know, end up adding to the conversation because it's a project that you're proud of that you did, then that can definitely be done in the secondary piece. I think I would just go back to like the resume has to speak for you before you get to speak for yourself. So if that's showing in that you have some skill, even if you haven't had like professional skill, then I would recommend putting it on there to try to get that in front of somebody as soon as possible.
You could also put a link on your LinkedIn. So that's where somebody could access it. If you're like, I'm not really sure if I want this on my resume, it could be on your LinkedIn as a place that a recruiter could find it. Also, hiring managers can look at it from there as well.
Great point.
Cool. So I think I had said to you guys that it was, you know, unemployment was at 20-25%, but it's actually at like 14%, which is better, but, you know, still really high. So have you guys been inundated with resumes for the roles that are out there? Is the competition among the resumes that you are getting just kind of overwhelming sometimes? And it kind of goes back to, yeah, I want it to stand out, but I don't want my resume to be too over the top, right? So if you are getting a lot of resumes, if it's for an SAP position, right, are you getting 12 of them, right, in addition to, you know, a whole bunch that maybe aren't qualified, right?
I would say we're getting a decent amount. I saw things slow down just in general overall. So even I think that people were just adjusting to whatever was happening in their personal situation, even if it was being furloughed or being laid off, that they were, you know, taking some time to adjust. Everything slowed down for us. I felt like that just kind of happened across the world, really. But now things are starting to pick up a little bit more. And yeah, I would say the job market is a bit more scarce, and there are more applicants. I haven't seen like a huge rush where it is that like overwhelming feeling, but I am seeing the pace pick back up. So I think that people are, you know, starting to maybe consider their job search and, you know, where they want to go, and knowing that companies might be getting back to a new normal or whatever is coming around the corner. So, but that's been, you know, my experience with it.
Being in retail, we have seen an increase in our resumes, because a lot of retail companies have either furloughed or had to lay off their individuals from their team. So we have seen an increase in resumes. I wouldn't necessarily say an increase in qualified candidates, but increase in applicants. But interestingly, we have actually seen a lot of our qualified candidates that we want to move forward with pull themselves out of the candidate pool because they don't want to move positions at this point, or they were nervous about starting a new position. Even if they weren't working, they were nervous about starting a new position during such a weird time. Starting with a retail company sounded really scary to them too, so I don't blame them at all, but we're hoping that we'll start to see people who are willing to make a move now that more companies are starting to open up their hiring and like the economy is starting to open up again, because that was something that was impacting us. We yeah, we were on a hiring freeze, but most of our IT positions, we did not fully freeze. We were still looking and entertaining candidates because it is such an important area for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, pretty much what Morgan said, definitely seeing an uptick. And yeah, just kind of a larger candidate pool, I'll say. As I mentioned before with our questionnaire results, I mean, pretty much everyone that I've seen said, you know, reason for leaving. I was laid off due to COVID-19, you know, that sort of thing. So right now, quite frankly, I'm more just kind of drilling down. I have a little more tunnel vision when I'm looking at the resumes, you know, just due to the volume, you just really have to kind of go in there and say, okay, qualified, not qualified. You know what I mean? Like, obviously spending, you know, time being considerate and everything, looking at this, but, so I would say, you know, I know we kind of touched on this, but right now I think it's just all about, you know, the work experience and listening at the, you know, what you really want to highlight is right there for the recruiter to see, kind of first page, as soon as they put it up, they see it.
Okay. Does anybody have any other questions? I've kind of run through my list. Anybody have anything else?
Like, now it's virtual screening and virtual interview. So how difficult or how different are you feeling that?
The only difference in our...
What's the difference in having that face-to-face and virtual?
We do all video interviews for right now. We start with sunscreen, and then if there's a hiring manager screen, and then the only difference is that instead of coming on site, it's a virtual interview. So it's video, kind of the same process, same questions, same everything, same communication cadence with a recruiter. It's just over video. We have had candidates who part of the reason they don't want to make changes because they've never been to the office. So that we're still trying to work through because we're not really sure how to handle that. So we have individuals who we were ready to make offers to and they pulled themselves out of the running because they had never seen the office. So that's something to think about for yourself, because you're typically like walking around, seeing the space, seeing how people are reacting and the culture that is kind of like there. I mean, I would be interested to see how your companies are handling anything like that. If you guys have recommendations, because we're just at a loss.
No, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I think for us, it's like we're just kind of adapting and we're kind of seeing like, okay, we can kind of keep the momentum going. You know what I mean? You know, a lot of phone interviews, we kind of do it like phone interview is like kind of the initial, and then second interviews are video, that sort of thing. And then people just kind of start working remotely. But I mean, it's been all right. You know, it's a learning curve. It's, you know, it's different. You know what I mean? It's more for us getting the business to kind of be comfortable making that decision to say, okay, we've never actually met this person, but you know, we're confident in them, that sort of thing. So that's kind of where we're seeing more of the challenge.
I think there's this little element of having your company take that leap of faith now that you know, there are a lot of companies that do remote work, and I know that we had work from home, but it was like on very occasional if you needed to. And now it's like we do want to go back to the office, and our CEO, you know, wants to make sure that we are, but you have to kind of take it with this fact that we are still being able to do our jobs remotely. And so for someone, I've been just fortunate personally that the people that I've been hiring in the higher level positions are able to just be remote in general. So I haven't had to like try to negotiate with them about not seeing the office just because it wasn't a position that was going to need them to be in office during that time. But in regards to the video interview, you know, I just try to tell people that it really is the same, that you just, you know, how you would dress, how your demeanor would be, everything that you would do for an in-person interview, do for a video interview. The only other thing is to like try your best to make sure, you know, it's a like quiet space, but we are very understanding, whether it's hiring manager, whether it's us. I mean, my dogs bark all the time. It's terrible. They're the worst coworkers, but like everyone knows it. You have kids, you have dogs. It's a different time that we're living in, and we're all really understanding about it. So I wouldn't stress too much about that, other than, you know, trying to take some, you know, steps to make it a close, like a more of an interview environment. And other than that, it should be pretty similar.
I know, like, some of the companies that we work with, they've been adding more people to the interviews. That way you can kind of get to know some people on the team or more people that you would be working with to kind of help with the fact that you're not in the office and you're not meeting people. So they've kind of adjusted the way that they've interviewed a little bit, which I think helps a little bit, because then you're getting to know more personalities than maybe just one or two. But to everyone else's point too, it's, you know, interviewing through video is just the same as if you're in person, you know, dressing up, making sure your background is clean and you're in a good area. We've heard from quite a few managers, you know, that they kind of look at your background like someone was in a very disheveled, messy place, and they're like, oh, it's kind of distracting when you see that in the background. So you almost have to think about where you're interviewing to when you're in a video, which is, I guess, a little added extra that you don't normally have to think about. But, you know, little things here and there like that can really help your video experience be a little bit better.
Good advice. Good advice. Thanks. So that's all the questions that I have. We actually got through everything. Thanks so much for folks asking the questions from the audience too. Appreciate that. And thank you again to our panelists. I was going to make an announcement, but we're sort of down in numbers, so I'll wait for the next event and then make our announcement, but it wasn't a very big deal. Is there anything else that anybody else has in terms of questions or comments or anything like that? No? Well, just a big thank you to everybody, panelists again and attendees. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks,
everybody. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
I haven't recorded this because I think this is just like,
and everything like that in the same company, like that's nice to see. But yeah, like if somebody lists, you know, 8-9 different companies over the last 2-3 years, you know, and it's not consulting or contracting, that kind of makes you wonder. So I like when they explain that gap. So that's one question answered anyway.
Yeah, so
a red flag.
I do think it's, you know, it is tough and it's a situational thing, but I've also seen people that, you know, worked like in the maybe PTA or something, or like worked as a treasury or did something, even if it was for like a family business. And, you know, anything that is utilizing skills that you think are going to be valuable to a potential position or, you know, to add to what you're doing. I think that it's helpful to help bridge that gap a little bit. Or, you know, I always say, you know, maybe start with temporary work. I know that a lot of times, you know, they're more open to someone's background to get a little bit of experience now under your belt in this, you know, potentially, you know, new era, to get a little bit of that experience. Sometimes it is hard for a company to full-time commit to somebody that, you know, has been out of the workforce. But that's not to disvalue somebody. We know that there are a lot of great people that do have to re-enter at some point and weren't doing it for, you know, a point or another. But there are some ways to try to be creative to plump up your resume a little bit and your experience to get you to that final destination of where you want to be.
Are you guys seeing a lot more resumes? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I also wonder too, like when somebody has a break in their experience totally fine, but I typically ask, how did you stay connected to technology during that time, especially for IT positions? Because it's like, how do I know you've kept up to date with things and you're not just going to come back and think that everything is the same as when you left 10 years ago? Because we've evolved so much. So, you know, even if they're just like, I read LinkedIn articles and I've done some LinkedIn training or like simple stuff like that, super fine, but you've been thinking about it, you care about it, and it's something that you've cared and taken your own personal time to do. So I love to hear things like that.
Morgan, that's exactly what I was going to say too. Like if you, any kind of courses you've taken or articles you've read, anything that you've done to try to keep up with anything, I think it's so important to add to show that while you had that gap and you weren't working for whatever the case may be, that you were still keeping up to things. So I definitely think it's important to add that stuff if you have a gap.
Kind of like off of that question, that was actually one that I wrote down that I wanted to make sure was answered. But for job gaps, so would you prefer that someone put the reason why the gap is there on their resume? Like, and on top of that, do you guys ever rule someone out when you see a job gap, or do you investigate a little bit further before you make that decision?
I investigate, Sarah, if it's not explained, I'll say, hey, I noticed, or if I see kind of a lot of like jumping around, you know, different companies, I'll say, talk me through that. You know, it's something that makes me kind of scratch my head a little bit. Like, I want to, like you said, investigate that, because a lot of times the hiring manager will also ask me that, you know, hey, what's going on with this? Just to have that answer ready for them. But it's not a deal breaker, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
When I see a large gap in years, I typically think you probably stayed at home with kids. So I usually ask about it. That doesn't make a decision for me. If I see a lot of jumping around though, from like, unless it's temp positions or contract positions, then I will rule them out if I have other qualified candidates. Because that to me says they might not be able to hold down a job, or they can't stay comfortable somewhere, or whatever the reason might be. That is a red flag for me. If I don't have other qualified candidates and it's a tough to fill position, then I will still talk to them. But if I have a rec full of candidates, that will make me decline them. But usually like a large gap in years does not, because it typically is something they can easily explain.
Yeah.
I was going to say that too, that if it's a position that is heavily saturated with applicants, that sometimes it can be a deal breaker for me if there's not a little explanation. So
okay.
I like it, but I'm fine with that being in the cover letter too. Like that would be a reason that I would try to look at someone's cover letter, would be like, you know, there's this huge gap. Like, do they have an explanation for it if it's not on there? A couple of options to, you know, help try to overcome that if it is a position that, you know, again, you're like talking like support teams, you know, sales, maybe just even like entry-level coding, like ones that are usually pretty popular positions if you want to stay competitive.
Okay, I think a sort of side question to that. A lot of times when you see, you know, the postings for tech jobs, there's a long list of, there's like maybe a main skill, but a number of side skills that you're looking for, and seldom you're an exact match. For some of those side skills, what's the best way to demonstrate the ability to learn that side skill? And I'm going to use like a report writing tools and as example as a side skill in a space. So you've got a new snazzy report writer tool that I haven't learned yet, but the fact that I've learned 5 different report writing tools over the last however many years can help demonstrate that I pick them up quickly. Is there a place on the resume for that, or is that something you slide more into where you would go to the cover letter?
That's a great question. I would say that it could be even both. I wouldn't mind seeing that in a bullet point ever, whether it was just kind of a highlights of some of your technology skills, saying, you know, worked with all these different reporting tools, learned each, you know, brand new at each company I joined, or, you know, during your overviews of your time at the job, saying that, you know, I picked up this new reporting writing tool, hadn't used before. Obviously maybe a bit more polished than that, but I could definitely, you know, pick that out, and that to me would say, oh, she has the ability to pick up new technology, so that if it was a side, not a mandatory requirement, then that could definitely you know, be something that I would want to talk further about.
For sure. Yeah, Joanne is guilty of having a very long we need this list. And what I typically do is I pick a couple of those skills, even if it's still in the application or the job posting. I will pick a couple of those skills that I know or need to have. And if they're not on the resume, they're going to get declined. But if it's something like a report writing tool or whatever it might be, if I've seen, this is where I think bullet points come into play and having your technical skills throughout your bullet points. Because if I see, like, at this company you use this thing, and then at this other company you use this other thing, and then this other company you use this other thing, you have the technical aptitude to learn something new. And there is something that is similar about each one of those. And if we use something different, you've learned three others, you can learn this one too. So I would say, like, that's where you can work it into your bullet points and show, like, you have had these different experiences. If it's something that is required, so going back to my same example, SAP is required for one of our positions. It is a not negotiable. Even if you have a list of all of these other things that you've used, if you have not used SAP, you are declined from that position, because it is, like, but clearly written in the job description that we need that experience. So that's the time where I wouldn't necessarily use technical aptitude to make a decision on if you could move into the role. But if it's one of those, like, preferred skills or, you know, exposure to whatever, I think that's where you can see and make a decision based on aptitude.
Yeah, I think Morgan brings up a great point, because, you know, kind of from that intake session on, like, as recruiters, that's kind of our responsibility to say, okay, you want them to have some sort of ticketing experience. It can be Salesforce, ServiceNow, whatever, or no, it's a must have. Like, I need PeopleSoft financials. You know what I mean? So I think that's a great point. So I think if, you know, because a lot of times we'll say, yeah, okay, you know, this person doesn't have whatever, you know, are you comfortable with this? So I think putting that, and then just, yeah, looking at the job description, say, okay, this is a must have, you know, it's something that. And sometimes, you know, I'll go back to the hiring manager and say, we're not getting any resumes. Can we kind of scale back a little bit, kind of, you know, be a little bit more lenient, and then we'll look with certain technologies and everything. So I think it's important. And I think maybe even Megan called that out to kind of bullet that out and everything for technology.
Along that same vein, but, like, slightly different, if you are looking at a job, at least for my experience, and you check most of the boxes, I would encourage you to apply, even if it's, like, this is required, and you can check, like, 5 out of the 7, I would encourage you to apply, because something on there is probably negotiable, and if it's not, okay, fine, but you at least got your resume in there, and there could be another position that you're qualified for. If you check, like, 2 out of 7, then you're probably not qualified for the role. But that's typically how I gauge it. Like, if you have most of the things, it's worth at least submitting your resume.
I've heard that they use software to initially screen the candidate. So how important are the keywords? So do we have to keep changing the keywords every time we apply for a position, or how is it going to be?
So we don't use software. I think maybe some very large companies. I don't know. I don't have any experience with that. But like Morgan stated earlier, that sometimes she does some keyword searches for some key pieces of a position. And I would echo that if you are, you know, applying for a job that's very specific in a certain technology, then that would be the only time that I would maybe encourage you to write as much information that you've used the technology with, and that would then enhance the keyword, which would then, you know, show us that, oh, she worked with it in so many different capacities.
I think that also kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier as to having maybe more than one version of your resume. I know not many companies necessarily use like a keyword scanner, but I think that would be more so with the position that you're applying for, you want to tailor your resume to that. So I think that would be kind of where having more than one version of your resume or tweaking it to a specific role would come in play there. Maybe not necessarily specifically for a keyword search.
Thank you.
Yeah, we don't use a keyword search, but I do use my own, but I did work for a company that did, and I actually reviewed all of the candidates that were filtered out to make sure that it was working. So there is like some, there are, I think there are like a lot larger companies or companies with smaller departments that can't go through everything. But we did like an audit where we made sure that everything was working and that it was filtering out the right kinds of people. But I do think those key words are important, whether they're using a system or not. If there are required technologies and that's not listed in your resume, that to me is, you're filtered out anyways. So I think they're important. And like Taylor said, it has to do with like those different versions of your resume, depending on the position.
Good question, Deepa.
Thank you.
So I've had like younger new grads come and ask about, you know, internships at PNC or just a job. We have a development program there. How do I get into that? Because I think we get a lot of applicants. I don't know that we take everybody. But one of the things that I know when I was at MRI that I would talk to folks about is, you know, show that you have this real passion and interest in, and it was always technology folks, right? It was always developers. Show that you have this interest by maybe putting together a portfolio. And when somebody asks, you know, do you have a repo or something of your work? You know, and this could actually apply to the folks who are designers as well, right? Like UI UX designers. And just have a portfolio of work so that if you are interviewed, you can sort of point to this and say, hey, look, I've got all this cool stuff. You know, I really am a developer or something. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I kind of never talked to a recruiter about giving people that advice. You know, just something that I thought to tell them. What do you guys think of, you know, candidates who come up with that stuff?
So a lot of times that's like required for design positions for us is to show a portfolio. So I think that that's definitely a great way to start building a portfolio is just, yeah, anything that you're excited about or happy with to start, you know, storing in a certain area that then if you are asked for that, it would be easily attainable and you can always go in and continue to update that. And then really like I also have seen like people list on resumes their GitHub page or, you know, some sort of projects that they've done. Mm-hmm. And if you're lacking in professional experience because it is an internship that you're seeking or, you know, you are making a career change or whatever, anything like that is helpful. I would say that that's definitely something that I've passed along to managers and they've said, you know, oh yeah, I looked at their page. So if it's not me who doesn't quite understand like the intricacies of the technology or if it is, you know, someone that does, like any of that is helpful.
That's good to know. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Go ahead.
Yeah, when we go to, you know, like coding boot camps and we do, you know, like matchmaking events or something like that, to Megan's point, you know, if their experience is a little more junior and they don't really have a lot of, you know, tangible work experience to reference, they can talk about those projects at length and, you know, give a nice robust interview and talk about that. And, you know, they can visit their page and everything like that with the GitHub and everything. And it's good. It's enough to kind of, like I said before, prove that you've done this, that, and the other, and they can speak to it for sure.
Yeah, there's kind of only really two instances where we've asked to see somebody's work. And the first one was an associate level position. He didn't have any experience, but he talked about a project. So he showed us the project and that like blew the whole team away and was like, we have to hire this guy because we're going to really lose out if we don't. So that was like a huge win for him. We weren't even looking for an entry level position. We were actually looking for mid level and decided on him because his project was so great. And then the other time that we've asked was a mobile developer because we wanted to see what work they had done in the mobile space. And so he shared, like the app that he had worked on and talked us through like what he had done. So those are really the only instances where we ask somebody to look at something. We have had some mobile developers not be able to share anything, and that was kind of like, we're not sure we want to make this jump. But more of the back end, like anyone who's in like our back end or back office stuff, we've never really asked to see any of their work. But more of that like customer facing stuff we would.
Is it something that should, like a link to a portfolio or a repo, is that something that should go on a resume or is that like a second conversation?
I think it depends. If that's what you want to highlight as your experience, then I think it should be on the resume because again, that's all that I know. If you have nothing else and then like there's a lot of times that I would say, oh, they're not qualified. Whereas, you know, some sort of project or something could help say, okay, let's talk further about it. But if you're someone that does have experience and these are things that you just, you know, end up adding to the conversation because it's a project that you're proud of that you did, then that can definitely be done in the secondary piece. I think I would just go back to like the resume has to speak for you before you get to speak for yourself. So if that's showing that you have some skill, even if you haven't had like professional skill, then I would recommend putting it on there to try to get that in front of somebody as soon as possible.
And you could also put a link on your LinkedIn. So that's where somebody could access it. If you're like, I'm not really sure if I want this on my resume, it could be on your LinkedIn as a place that a recruiter could find it. Also hiring managers can look at it from there as well.
Great point.
Cool. So I think I had said to you guys that it was, you know, unemployment was at 20-25%, but it's actually at like 14%, which is better, but, you know, still really high. So have you guys been inundated with resumes for the roles that are out there? Is the competition among the resumes that you are getting just kind of overwhelming sometimes? And it kind of goes back to, yeah, I want it to stand out, but I don't want my resume to be too over the top, right? So if you are getting a lot of resumes, if it's for an SAP position, right, are you getting 12 of them, right? In addition to, you know, a whole bunch that maybe aren't qualified, right?
I would say we're getting a decent amount. I saw things slow down just in general overall. So even I think that people were just adjusting to whatever was happening in their personal situation, even if it was being furloughed or being laid off, that they were, you know, taking some time to adjust. Everything slowed down for us. I felt like that just kind of happened across the world, really. But now things are starting to pick up a little bit more. And yeah, I would say the job market is a bit more scarce, and there are more applicants. I haven't seen like a huge rush where it is that like overwhelming feeling, but I am seeing the pace pick back up. So I think that people are, you know, starting to maybe consider their job search and, you know, where they want to go, and knowing that companies might be getting back to a new normal or whatever is coming around the corner. So, but that's been, you know, my experience with it.
Being in retail, we have seen an increase in our resumes, because a lot of retail companies have either furloughed or had to lay off their individuals from their team. So we have seen an increase in resumes. I wouldn't necessarily say an increase in qualified candidates, but increase in applicants. But interestingly, we have actually seen a lot of our qualified candidates that we want to move forward with pull themselves out of the candidate pool because they don't want to move positions at this point. Or they were nervous about starting a new position, even if they weren't working. They were nervous about starting a new position during such a weird time. Starting with a retail company sounded really scary to them too. So I don't blame them at all, but we're hoping that we'll start to see people who are willing to make a move now, that more companies are starting to open up their hiring, and like the economy is starting to open up again, because that was something that was impacting us. We were on a hiring freeze, but most of our IT positions, we did not fully freeze. We were still looking and entertaining candidates because it is such an important area for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, pretty much what Morgan said. Definitely seeing an uptick, and yeah, just kind of a larger candidate pool, I'll say. As I mentioned before with our questionnaire results, I mean, pretty much everyone that I've seen said, you know, reason for leaving, I was laid off due to COVID-19, you know, that sort of thing. So right now, quite frankly, I'm more just kind of drilling down. I have a little more tunnel vision when I'm looking at the resumes, you know, just due to the volume, you just really have to kind of go in there and say, okay, qualified, not qualified. You know what I mean? Like, obviously spending, you know, time being considerate and everything, looking at this. But so I would say, you know, I know we kind of touched on this, but right now I think it's just all about, you know, the work experience and listing it. But, you know, what you really want to highlight is right there for the recruiter to see, kind of first page. As soon as they put it up, they see it.
Okay. Does anybody have any other questions? I've kind of run through my list. Anybody have anything else?
Yeah, that you wanna... I have. Like, now it's virtual screening and virtual interview. So how difficult or how different are you feeling that?
The only difference in our...
What's the difference in having that face-to-face and virtual?
We do all video interviews for right now. We start with sunscreen, and then if there's a hiring manager screen, and then the only difference is that instead of coming on site, it's a virtual interview. So it's video, kind of the same process, same questions, same everything, same communication cadence with a recruiter. It's just over video. We have had candidates who, part of the reason they don't want to make changes because they've never been to the office. So that we're still trying to work through because we're not really sure how to handle that. So we have individuals who we were ready to make offers to, and they pulled themselves out of the running because they had never seen the office. So that's something to think about for yourself. Cause you're typically like walking around, seeing the space, seeing how people are reacting and the culture that is kind of like there. I mean, I would be interested to see how your companies are handling anything like that. If you guys have recommendations, because we're just at a loss.
No, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I think for us, it's like we're just kind of adapting, and we're kind of seeing like, okay, we can kind of keep the momentum going. You know what I mean? You know, a lot of phone interviews, we kind of do it like phone interview is like kind of the initial, and then second interviews are video, that sort of thing. And then people just kind of start working remotely. But I mean, it's been all right. You know, it's a learning curve. It's, you know, it's different. You know what I mean? It's more for us getting the business to kind of be comfortable making that decision to say, okay, we've never actually met this person, but you know, we're confident in them, that sort of thing. So that's kind of where we're seeing part of the challenge.
I think there's this little element of having your company take that leap of faith now that you know, there are a lot of companies that do remote work, and I know that we had work from home, but it was like on very occasional if you needed to. And now it's like we do want to go back to the office, and our CEO wants to make sure that we are, but you have to kind of take it with this fact that we are still being able to do our jobs remotely. And so for someone, I've been just fortunate personally that the people that I've been hiring in the higher level positions are able to just be remote in general. So I haven't had to like try to negotiate with them about not seeing the office just because they haven't, it wasn't a position that was going to need them to be in office during that time. But in regards to the video interview, I just try to tell people that it really is the same, that you just, how you would dress, how your demeanor would be, everything that you would do for an in-person interview, do for a video interview. The only other thing is to like try your best to make sure, it's a like quiet space, but we are very understanding, whether it's hiring manager, whether it's us. I mean, my dogs bark all the time. It's terrible. They're the worst coworkers, but like everyone knows it. You have kids, you have dogs. It's a different time that we're living in, and we're all really understanding about it. So I wouldn't stress too much about that, other than trying to take some steps to make it a close like a more of an interview environment, and other than that it should be pretty similar.
I know like some of the companies that we work with, they've been adding more people to the interviews. That way you can kind of get to know some people on the team or more people that you would be working with to kind of help with the fact that you're not in the office and you're not meeting people. So they've kind of adjusted the way that they've interviewed a little bit, which I think helps a little bit, because then you're getting to know more personalities than maybe just one or two. But to everyone else's point too, it's, interviewing through video is just the same as if you're in person, dressing up, making sure your background is clean and you're in a good area. We've heard from quite a few managers, that they kind of look at your background like someone was in a very disheveled, messy place, and they're like, oh, it's kind of distracting when you see that in the background. So you almost have to think about where you're interviewing to when you're in a video, which is, I guess, a little added extra that you don't normally have to think about. But, little things here and there like that can really help your video experience be a little bit better.
Good advice. Thanks. So that's all the questions that I have. We actually got through everything. Thanks so much for folks asking the questions from the audience too. Appreciate that. And thank you again to our panelists. I was going to make an announcement, but we're sort of down in numbers, so I'll wait for the next event and then make our announcement, but it wasn't a very big deal. Is there anything else that anybody else has in terms of questions or comments or anything like that? No? Well, just a big thank you to everybody, panelists again and attendees. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks,
everybody. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
I've recorded this because I think this is just like